the My Money, My Lifestyle podcast. I'm your host, Maya Fisher-French, and I'm always here to discuss all things money because whether or not we like it, money matters. And I think this is especially true when it comes to our taxes. So that is what we're going to be talking about today. Now, if you listen to my podcast, you will know that 2 weeks ago, I spoke to Chris Axelson of National Treasury about how Treasury makes the decisions around the national budget and how they're going to tax us. So this week, I've invited tax expert André Bortma to unpack the implications of the tax proposals on our personal finances. And André, as it's the beginning of a tax year, I thought we could also use this time to look at ways to reduce our tax bill, because quite frankly, anyway, I can pay less tax, the happier I'll be.
Yeah, I mean, kicking us off with paying less tax as individuals, I think over the years, the number of deductions that's available to individuals have decreased. You know, no longer can you claim income protection. Medical aid changed from a deduction to a credit system, basically giving you a discount on your taxes. And the only real one that still makes a decent impact is the RA, or the PPRA, as I call it.
Yeah.
Pension, Provident, and Retirement Annuity. So yeah, the options are actually less for the biggest group for the biggest contributors to the tax collected. We have least incentives.
Exactly. So I think I want to go back to that a little bit later, because I also did some maths around how much more, you know, because things haven't been adjusted for inflation, things like the capital gains tax exemptions. I think that's sitting at 40,000 Rand still. It has been for so many years that if we adjust that for inflation, we'd be sitting at, I think, like 60,000. The big one, if I remember, was estate duty. So your first 3.5 million is free of estate duty when you pass away. Mm-hmm. But if we had adjusted for inflation, that should be around 8 million. So I want to, you know, that to me is a one of the things we talk about, André's wealth tax. Everyone says we need a wealth tax. We already have a wealth tax. Let's be honest. I mean, when you're paying that kind of money, you know.
We have three forms of wealth tax. So we've got estate duty, which is, and we've got donations tax. Now, donations tax is a wealth tax that prevents you from obviously giving whilst you're alive. And estate duty is the one that prevents you from giving everything, from basically evading estate tax. And then you've got capital gains for whenever there's wealth transfer from yourself to another when you sell your assets. What makes the wealth tax specifically what Treasury and what other countries like the UK is thinking about doing, the wealth tax that they are proposing is a percentage on your, let's call it, personal assets and liabilities. But the issue is most people's wealth is tied up in non-liquid assets. And so in order to pay a wealth tax, and this is why there was a study done at Wits University about, and that's what the Davis Tax Committee wanted to use as its support for wealth tax. The issue that everybody in our industry said why it is not a good tax to implement is because you have to cash out so a lot of wealth is not tied up in cash.
You have to disinvest, basically. So it goes against investments, yeah.
The best example I can give is I've got a couple on my client list who is sitting on a huge fixed deposit. So it's great for earning interest, and it's a decent fixed deposit, earning good interest. The problem is, because it's a fixed deposit, the tax have to be paid from, not from the fixed deposit interest, but from out of pocket. And so they are actually out of pocket because of a tax. And this is a good example of why wealth tax it might be a good idea theoretically, but practically it's it's actually against one of the four maxims of tax, and what's the guy, Adam Smith, and one of the maxims says tax should be easy to pay or convenient to pay. Wealth tax in the form that they want to implement it is not convenient.
Yeah, and I think that's, I mean, as I said, I would argue we already have wealth tax. The fact that they haven't adjusted, for example, the estate duty, exemptions from 3.5 million to 8 million. It's what it should be if we're just simply adjusted by inflation every year. So we're bringing in people, we're actually, what we're doing is we're almost taxing the middle class. We're not taxing the wealthy, and that is actually part of the problem because 3.5 million doesn't. It's not difficult to get there, right? By the time you have a primary residence, you've got a couple of investments. It's not difficult to suddenly be to find yourself, having to pay estate duties. So I think there's a lot going on here around how heavy our taxations are in South Africa. And of course, when people get angry about how few benefits they get for it and the corruption and people, it gets very emotional. But I wanted to unpack a little bit, and I've written a lot about it, this fiscal drag, the fact that this year and last year, National Treasury or government did not adjust the tax tables for inflation. And there has been a little bit of a misunderstanding around this. So I've been a big saying to people, by the way, if you had a salary adjusted increase, I mean, if inflation adjusted increase, technically you shouldn't be paying any more tax. If you paid 100,000 rand tax last year, you get a salary adjusted, inflation adjusted salary increase, you should still be paying 100,000 rand in tax the following year, right? Because you should be adjusting for inflation. But that isn't happening. It means that if your salary goes up, you'll be paying slightly more tax. But it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have less money. And I think I want to clarify that because I think people are now saying, oh, should I not get a salary increase because it means I'll move into another tax bracket. So maybe unpack that.
Yeah, I mean the and I like to use round numbers to simplify the equation. And I've told this story to, one-on-one, but never on a podcast platform. I had a potential client who was gonna get an increase of, let's call it 100,000 or potential extra income of 100,000. Yes, they get pushed into the new bracket. That's obvious. And let's say the person was in a refund position, used to get refunds because they've got RA or whatever the scenario is. The wrong advice is to say, don't get the increase and go into the new bracket because you're going to pay more tax and lose your refund. The fact of the matter is, you're still getting more money than what you wouldn't have before the increase. In fact, the way and I just reversed the calculation. If you, instead of looking at how much extra tax you will be paying, reverse the calculation and say, how much tax-free money am I actually earning? So if you're earning an extra 100,000 and you jump into the new bracket, and then let's say the new bracket is 35%, you're still earning an extra 65,000, right? If you say no to the increase, you're actually losing out on that extra 65 that you wouldn't have had if you didn't get the increase. So say, and another client was asking, but considering a job change where she was earning 800,000 rand a year, she was considering making the change to earning 1.1, but she was worried about I'm going to pay a lot more in tax. I'm going to say you're going to earn a lot more money. So there's a saying in the tax world, and I've been blowing that whistle for a very long time, just on vocally on X, because people on X, it's a small group that would. Anyway, I'm digressing here for a bit, but the saying is, don't let the tax tail wag the investment dog. And you could apply that to various other, don't let the tax tail wag the salary adjusted dog. Don't let the tax tail wag the immigration dog. Because now if you make your decisions based on tax, you're not going to go to, instead of thinking of going to Canada, you're now thinking of going to a place that where you have where you're paying less tax, because now you're using tax as your decision-making barometer. And that's not a tax. Tax is a consequence of making decisions. You make your decisions by taking tax into consideration. It's not the reason why you're doing things.
Now, and I think it is such a brilliant statement because I also see people trying to do things to avoid tax. And like you said, often taking and doing the wrong investments because of tax. I do have to tell you, Andre, one of the biggest scams I always come across is whenever you come across somebody peddling a Ponzi, they usually have some tax-free option in it. And it like the people hear, oh, I can get this money tax-free, and they fall for it. It like switches off their thinking brain. So telling people tax-free is usually a big, a way to attract them. And as you said, that's not necessarily the right decision. But because I remember, Andre, people asking me saying, should I buy a more expensive car? Because then the tax deduction on my travel allowance or whatever will be higher. Again, the wrong decision. The car's still going to cost you more money, right?
Yeah, I think in South Africa we also have a perverse incentive to take tax efficient options that's not necessarily financially sound. And
Exactly.
we're incentivized in South Africa to do that because of the when you read papers and discussions and around, I remember when I was still working for employers, there was this buzz around this idea of tax morality. But whenever tax morality is spoken of, it's spoken of the perspective of taxpayers submitting returns and paying their taxes. Tax morality is a two-sided coin. When you research what tax is, it is money collected in exchange for public services provided. And so you can kind of understand that when you read that there's tax mismanagement or there's corruption in government, that you want to find ways to pay less. And but again, I want to caution at making stupid financial decisions in order to pay less tax.
Absolutely. And I think that is important. And saying no to salary increases is really not a good decision. And I pulled some numbers just to have an idea. But, for example, I think this is the important part to understand with this fiscal drag. So say, for example, you had 40,000 rand a month you were earning in 2023. If we adjusted for inflation, you should be earning around 44,000 rand a month in by 2025, 2 years later. That's just a salary that increased by inflation. But you are now going to be paying about 10,000 rand more a year in tax. But remember, you're now receiving 44,000 rand. So yes, per annum, you will be paying more tax, but your salary, and I work the offset, so your salary should have increased by 4,000 rand a month if that adjusted the salary, the tax tables, but you're still going to get around 3,000 rand more a month. So it's not that you're going to get less than you were before. It's not like you go, I'm just, so I think that's important to understand. Yes, you will still get the increase, but you won't get as much of the increase as you would have had they adjusted the tax table. So I think that's probably a good way to explain it, and maybe just to remove the confusion around this.
Yeah, I think when you, again, that's why I simplified the mathematics behind only taking into account the total rand value that you're going to get your increase for, and calculating that tax on the increase, because then you can at least see what the net result is. Obviously, it's a bit easier to break it down into monthly, and but then you'll still get to the same. You'll still get to the same figures. So,
Yeah,
yeah,
so I think it's just I
and
wanted to really chat to you and explain that properly, because I think even I think I've even I have been guilty of not making that clear enough in my article. So, and I was rapped on the knuckles by a financial planner on LinkedIn about that, and I thought, okay, he's totally correct. We've got to be careful about how we're phrasing this so that we don't have people freaking out and saying no to salary increases. So yes, if your salary is increased by inflation, you will still get an increase. You just won't get the same increase that you would have had they adjusted the tax tables. But I do still feel, Andre, it's an important point to make, because it is a stealth tax, and we need to understand that effectively we're paying more tax than we should. Because I'm a little bit feeling, I feel like a lot of other people
Yeah,
included.
but also I think the what's currently happening, and this is not a political, I'm not a politics guy, but I think SARS and Kiesvetter, especially Kiesvetter, about this budget that was done recently, over the past number of years, it's been, I think Treasury became lax in finding ways to incentivize taxpayers more. You've mentioned we're just using one example, the adjusted tax tables for inflation. That's one example. You know, we did speak about the why not adjust the exclusion for capital gains? Why not adjust the VAT registration threshold has been 1 million for the past 16 years. For the past 16 years. That's crazy to me. Turnover tax, that threshold is still same 1 million. It's been the same for 13 years. So there are interest, 23,800 for good knows how long. So those small adjustments have been ignored. I actually do want to chat to Treasury at this year's tax in Durban, and because they are represented there, and ask them why are those small? I mean, yes, they make a difference, but do they make? I mean, it's really the tax tables that's the big one that everyone talks about. But the small incentives is going to help quite a few, especially the interest. I mean, if you've got a couple of hundred grand in there. And then all of a sudden you go from paying tax on your interest to not paying tax on your interest anymore. And you need to earn quite a bit of money saved up in order to not pay, in order not to pay tax on interest. But yeah, anyway, there's a couple of examples. Also, yeah, there's a couple of things I want to talk about on with regards to small business, because online businesses, small business, the SBC, Small Business Corporation, it still has that 3-employee rule for professional services. And these days, it's so easy to hire a consultant, to hire somebody from Fiverr, to work with freelancers, to work with interns for a year who's not full-time. And you'll never qualify for SBC because you're not hiring people full-time. So there's a number of things that Treasury can do, but just don't.
So, Andre, I'm like a classic example of that. I have 3 people who work for me, but they're all freelance, right? Because, again, I don't want the paperwork of full-time employees and all of that admin hassle. But they have been with me forever. But I can't claim or I can't, you know, I remain a professional services and I'm taxed fully, et cetera, et cetera. So I think I agree with you, but I think you're going to go nowhere. And I'll tell you why, because when I was speaking to Chris Axelson 2 weeks ago on the National Treasury, there's a couple of things he said to me. So first of all, he did say to me, this wasn't actually on the podcast, we had a discussion at the budget itself. And he said to me, you know, Maya, we couldn't go and increase the tax-free savings account minimum. You know, you can cap the 36,000 Rand a year. It should be at 46,000, I think now, if I do the maths. And if it's been adjusted for inflation, he said, we couldn't do that and increase VAT because those are seen as benefiting the rich. Tax-free savings accounts are only for rich people. That's how people perceive it. So now you're going to go and tell the poor that they're going to pay more VAT, but you're going to give more relief to people who have money to invest and save. So we're up against this optics in South Africa that any relief you give to anyone who isn't poor is anti-poor. And I think that's the rhetoric that you're up against. So anything that they are seen as giving a little bit more to people, because if you think about the interest exemption, and just by the way, the other thing he said to me in that discussion is he said the interest exemption will never increase again because we are now replacing it with tax-free savings accounts. But I mean, tax-free savings accounts are going to take a long time before you've amassed the kind of funds that you would have to have in an interest-bearing account right now before you hit the threshold. So, you know, this is the way they're thinking, but it we're not going to see any progression, I don't think, for people, middle-class people who are feeling enormous burden. Middle-class people are the ones with bonds. They're the ones with car finance. They're the ones who've been hit by these high interest rates. They carry the biggest burden of tax. They carry the biggest burden of VAT, by the way. VAT falls heavily on people not in the top 4 decimals, not the poorest of the poor. And I think it's that constant, we're trapped in this narrative where it is anything that is gives any relief to someone who actually earns a salary is anti-poor.
Yeah, for that, and I'm not saying we need a President Milei like they have in Argentina or a situation of USA with Trump, but it does then beg the question is, is what are the options? Because what you see now is you see people who's who if you're 30 and you're having kids and you're thinking, what are we gonna, you know, people are now deciding if I've got the means to, right? Let's say you're middle class and you're doing fairly okay, but you're being hit in South Africa really hard, like you're saying. The decisions are made. My kids can go wherever they want in the world. What people are, and I think Wogan may mentioned this, the concept of a country does no longer exist. People and the freedom to work and go wherever you want. People, the new economy is digital and work from anywhere. So a lot of young people who's got the who might have the ability, whether you're in tech and finance or whatever your scope is, if you're born in the right circumstances, unfortunately, in South Africa, and you have the means, the option, the UK is sitting with the exact same problem. People are exiting UK in droves because of the tax system, and where are they going? To countries where they are inviting digital nomads. And the tax rates are lower. So, and South Africa is actually a tax haven for digital nomads because they just make sure that they aren't enough days inside SA and they tax resident somewhere else. So they spend just under 6 months in South Africa, but they tax resident in Malta. And so what you're going to see, at least in the next 20, I don't care what Treasury decides in terms of, you know, okay, but we can't do this because of that. The people with the options are going to leave if it doesn't improve dramatically.
I think, you know, one thing I do want to say in the defense of South Africa is that our tax rates aren't as high as some other countries. I mean, we're not at the highest in the world by any stretch of the imagination. And I actually know where I live in Cape Town, there are a lot of swallows who come here for that exact reason, because actually it is. And I was speaking to an Australian recently. I was at a conference with him, and he was saying, oh, I believe there's been an uproar about your 2% increase, a percentage point increase in VAT. And what is your VAT rate? And I said, well, it's currently 15%. And he said, what? That's so low. So actually, by world standards, we have a very low VAT rate, which is interesting. So I think there are, we do need to understand South Africa, the context of South Africa in terms of our taxation. But I think what people are frustrated about is that it does feel that people are taxed sooner. In other words, you don't have to be earning a lot before you are paying quite significant taxes. And then I think we're seeing a tax morality issue. We are seeing people saying, and I remember so clearly when, you know, when Trevor Manuel was finance minister, Pravin Gordhan was the commissioner of SARS, I was a journalist, I was interviewing them, and we saw this huge increase in people joining the tax net. A large part of that was because they believed it was the right thing to do. They wanted to be part of a country that was, you know, growing and developing and equality. They bought into that. And you will remember that Trevor Manuel ran a surplus. We ran a budget surplus in those days. So people felt that their money was being used effectively. They didn't have a problem paying tax. And we're seeing that massively reversed. So I think there is a little bit of that in all of this. I think if we saw everything working efficiently, if I wasn't having the problems I'm having with Home Affairs right now, and you know, and blackouts and load shedding, and I think if we weren't experiencing all of that, we'd probably be less resentful about the tax rates.
I think an important point to make, and I haven't made this point on social media yet, is if you want to be a high tax country, you cannot have a high corruption country at the same time. The countries where the tax rates are the highest, and I'm specifically referring to the Scandinavian countries, there you have extremely high tax morality, but extremely high tax rates. And so you can't have both at the same time. If you want to have high corruption, you have to have lower taxes. Otherwise, the people leave. I think immigration numbers have increased dramatically. The number of people asking me to do tax immigration, CTR, cease to be a resident, is increasing. I've done over 70 applications since starting IGAFU. People are but what is more is people are a lot of people are no longer taking full-time positions where they are working for South African companies. What's increasing now more because of the personal tax issues is people are working for overseas companies and charging them as a company. Because companies are audited less by SARS statistically compared to individuals. If you are under a certain turnover threshold or assets threshold, and sure. So, you know, but I think individuals are feeling the brunt. And yeah, again, you make the point that we are taxed less compared to, but on the flip side, what do people actually get something for what they're paying for? And so in South Africa, I think you can make a fair argument that, I mean, look at Johannesburg. Somebody tweeted the other day, I think her name, she's also a journalist. She said, I don't want to move to Cape Town. I just want Joburg to be better.
Yeah. And there was a radio show, and I was listening today to people who are the people who've moved to Cape Town from Johannesburg are moving back to Johannesburg simply because they can't afford to live in Cape Town because the property prices are so high here. But they, you know, they exactly what they said. We love Joburg. We want to be in Johannesburg, but, you know, it needs to be working. So I think there is that. That is quite a big issue. But I also, you know, you were talking a little bit earlier about digital nomads and self-employed people. And I know you and I have had this discussion before where the biggest growth actually in employment is in the self-employed space. There are less and less people joining corporates. And I think that's another area that tax is not keeping up, the tax legislation. And you know what, quite frankly, Andre, products as well. You know, all these products that are there are all linked to any, I find the financial industry is also so narrow focused on corporate earning people, people who earn a regular salary. And you know, lending, home, well, you and I discussed home loans. I've written an article about you and my discussion around home loans. You know, do you think we really need to start seeing a huge shift in the mind, the thinking both of National Treasury, but also our financial institutions that actually going forward, you need to start accepting that more and more people are going to be self-employed or have their own businesses?
100%. I think the one thing that is frustrating to me is AI is taking over, and AI agents. So the need to employ more people and the ability for individuals to earn what they used to earn at corporate is dramatically increasing. So you've got so your solopreneurs, people working for themselves, and also working from home. The working from home thing has not been adjusted. The tax law hasn't changed around that, but you're finding that more people are working from home. I think, you know, a forward-thinking treasury would consider adding in the small business section, if you're in fintech, if you're in tech, if you're doing AI things, if you're in that space, you can fall into the small business corporation section. So, and they are, you know, because there's that rule, the personal service provider rule, which prevents a person working in corporate to quit their job and charging the company as a company, because, you know, that's a personal service provider. But now you have some smart folks who said, well, okay, take them on as a client and just get a second client and charge that. And now you have two clients and you fall, and all of a sudden you turn yourself from an normal employed individual to a self-employed solopreneur with two big clients, and you're earning double what you used to earn, and the tax is only 27%. A lot more people are doing that, and like I said, I think the also the creator economy is also growing. Sure, in South Africa, people are doing stuff on YouTube and TikTok and even on X. You know, the number of people earning additional income outside of employment, that's also increasing. So, but yeah, so definitely a more forward-thinking budget would have been preferred. And I think the next 5 years, we're still thinking like I think the other thing, so sorry to digress again, the 6-7 code manual, where you have all the codes of industries, right, that Stats SA, you have to categorize what type of business do you have. It hasn't been updated in years. I can't remember the exact year. It needs to be updated because there's the things in IT is not there. Things in AI is not there. Web development stuff is not there. And that is where, you know, in a week's time, all these chatbots and AI agents is already new and updated, and new things happening, and the world is going there, and we're South Africa is falling behind unless you're on it.
Look, I mean, I think one thing, you know, when I speak to Treasury and you see that, you just have to see they kept, we haven't passed this budget yet, by the way, the day that you and I are talking today, we haven't passed this thing. So there's
we
this
haven't,
massive
no.
political stuff going on. It's probably the last thing in the whole world they have the time for is to review this. And I do think that we're not, I think realistically, you're not going to see anything that is going to allow that tax base to seep any further. I think they are absolutely terrified of losing any more taxpayers or leakages in the system by allowing more tax breaks. I think we're going to see anything. I'm going to see the opposite of anything. They're just tightening down. I mean, SARS was given an additional 4 billion, which means that they, I think they're going to have 7.5 billion rand over the next 3 years to fine taxpayers. That's actually what they've been given the money for. It's to go after people who owe them money, people who have not handed in their tax returns, but also develop further AI to find tax avoidance. So it's I don't think we're going to get a lot of relief. I think if anything, we're going to have a lot more scrutiny from SARS going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what, to be honest, there's a couple of, and I call them SARS blind spots. I'm working on a book, which is kind of a layman's guide to taxes. And one of the chapters I'm working on is called SARS blind spots. And one of SARS's blind spots is cash run businesses. Was on somebody from Africa, I think they're from Nigeria, can't remember which publication, asked me about the taxi industry and how little tax they pay compared to their earnings. And simply, you know, do you make a card payment when taking a taxi? No, you don't. You pay cash. And so the actual businesses where SARS can look at and find money is cash. They will find more money than what they'll know what to do with going after cash run businesses. End of story. Like I'll repeat this until they actually decide, okay, you know what, we're gonna have to do something.
Well, you know, the fastest way to bring cash-based businesses into the tax net is that. So that was, of course, one of the other strategies. You increase VAT by 2%, and those cash businesses are, you know, at some point they're buying goods and services that are VAT-able. So that was one of the other ideas, was that they will tap into more into the cash-based. So this thing is challenging, but you're quite right. I mean, there are a lot of people who are not paying tax, who should be paying tax. And I think if everybody was paying tax, who should be, possibly there'd be room to reduce taxes, which of course would be very nice. But I don't know if I don't know where we're at in the country, whether they would reduce tax or just spend more. So we'd need to see.
Yeah, I mean, but the issue of finding more taxes, the place where most of the tax is found is standard employment. That's just statistically true. So. Yeah. You know, and whether those individuals are compliant or not doesn't matter. They're still collecting the pay as you earn from them. So it is not individual tax that actually is where the tax must be found.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the point is
individuals are paying the tax.
The individuals are paying the tax. It's the people who are not receiving formal. And as we were saying earlier, there's going to be less and less people earning formal salaries because people are leaving the formal industry. So I think Treasury and SARS have their work cut out for them. But I want to, just sum up with some kind of key points for the listeners around the opportunity not to pay tax legally. So you mentioned obviously your retirement savings. That's the kind of obvious one. And it was very interesting that was one of the things that Treasury looked at. They said, should we reduce the cap? So right now you can contribute 27.5% of your salary tax free, and it's capped at 350,000. That was on the table. That was on the table to possibly cut those tax exemptions. Thank goodness they didn't, because I think that would have been an uproar. We have medical tax credits, which they have not adjusted for inflation. So that's another way of not giving us, but you do at least get a tax credit. What other ways do we have? I mean, if you're a self-employed person, what is it like to be able to deduct home office expenses. I know that that's become more has been clamped down on.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. If you're full-time employed and you're trying to claim home office, don't even try, because the effort and Keith Engel, CEO of SATE, said this: if it's hard for SARS to approve, they'll disallow it. And so it's easier if you're self-employed or you're a commission earner, independent contractor, you can claim expenses, and it's easier to claim home office expenses. But know that you fall into SARS's orange and red category, which is easier to audit. Individuals who are full-time employed, obviously, if you get a travel allowance, keep a logbook, and you can write off the travel deduction. And then all what's left is pension, provident fund, and RA. RA being an after-tax deduction that you decide that you're going to do after you've gotten your salary. And provident fund and pension are pre-tax, which is obviously better. But not a lot of companies. Most corporates, a lot of corporates will have pensions, but a lot of small businesses don't.
But I just want to clarify, sorry, on the RA being after tax. So it is you get paid your salary, then you invest in the RA, and then you get a rebate. So you do get your tax back. It is tax deductible. I mean, certainly I use that. At the end of the year, I top up on my RA, and I always make sure that I try not to get a tax rebate, because that always you don't want to trigger audits. So, but yeah, so an RA is generally done. But you get the money as a rebate.
And but to be honest, that is actually the only deduction available to individuals. Medical aid is not. You have to have medical aid, or you have to go for public health care, which is, my mother-in-law have to wait, I don't know for how much she had to wait just for an appointment for to get a consultation in order for an operation to happen at some point. It doesn't work like that if you have private healthcare. The second, so medical is not a tax deduction. It's you either have it or you don't. Donations is a benevolent choice. It's not a tax deduction. You choose whether you want to give to the SPCA or not. It's not a tax deduction. The tax deduction is just oh, congratulations, you gave to the SPCA. The only real tax deduction is RAs and pensions. So there are no, outside of RAs, there's no other tax tool for individuals.
So
There
when you
is
said,
none.
I just want to clarify, because a PBO or a public benefit organization can be a deduct. It is, so it
It
does
is
reduce your
a
taxable income,
deduction.
but
Yeah,
you've obviously
no.
had to pay away. So it's not like you're benefiting from it. You've said, I'm going to give 100,000 rand to the SPCA. That is taken off your taxable income, but you still have handed 100,000 rand over to someone.
Yeah, exactly. So, and the deduction, if your tax rate is, if your effective tax rate is 30%, and you donated 100,000, you can write off 30,000 on your tax bill. But again, that is a consequence of you just giving. It's not a. I can't, Andre. What tax advice will you give me? And I'll say, okay, you've maxed out your RA. I can't tell the person to donate to a PBO. That's not tax advice. That is their choice. It's a benevolent choice. It's not tax advice. It's education. Yeah, you'll get a write-off if you donate to a PBO, but it's still the taxpayer's choice. So from a taxpayer's choice, the tax option, individuals who are full-time employed have no options other than the RA to actually a meaningful deduction
I think
to
one
pay
way
less
to look
tax.
at a donation is to say, I don't feel that my tax is being used as efficiently as it could, and I feel that if I gave it to this public benefit organization, my money would be better spent. And that could be another way of kind of thinking about it, I suppose. But ultimately, you're right. It's not a, I'm going to save myself money.
Yeah, but it's also a percentage off. So people think, oh, okay, if I owe SARS 50,000, can I just donate that 50,000? I'll say, no. If you donate 50,000, only 30% of it will reduce. It will
The
only re
tax.
so that's also when people say, I would rather donate the taxes than pay SARS. that doesn't work. As a company, if you want to pay a service provider, that is 100%, but still it's a percentage of. So, you know, I'm very careful to advise doing things to pay less tax by reducing your net profit as a business, because that's not smart business decisions. You get the service providers that you want and you pay their fees. So you make good, again, we come back to that conversation, is don't let the tax tail wag the business dog.
Absolutely. I think that is important. But there are obviously some basic tax, you know, healthy tax behavior to do, which is, you know, use your contributions to retirement fund. You still will be, by the way, taxed at retirement, but, you know, you can at least postpone that taxation. And of course, the other one that I love is your tax-free savings account. Yes, it's with after-tax income, but it's, you know, it's really great to be able to take that out of retirement tax-free. So I think there are, you know, there are ways of financial planning. Let's put it that way. You can be efficient around your financial planning. So I think that is some good advice. But Andrea, it's been such a great conversation. And I think we've given some of our personal views on the whole tax position in South Africa. Unfortunately, sadly, I don't think Treasury is going to be listening to us. They have promised something on tax-free savings accounts next year. And I think they're going to have to look at the whole taxation of investments and exemptions again. But again, I just don't see us getting any tax relief anytime soon.
Yeah, I think the GNU, because it's so young, I think politically we're in for an interesting next four years, because whatever happens, I mean, this year we're not 3 months in, and already you can tell that South Africa can no longer do politically whatever it feels like without the world taking notice.
Yep, interesting times for our, I think, globally, locally, and for our finances. I think that's definitely the answer. So thank you, Andre.
No, it's a pleasure.